We're getting a good taste of 3D today. My talk is about semi-automatic 2D to 3D conversion, merging graph cuts and random walks. So I will talk a bit about 2D to 3D conversion. It's definitely not dead and won't be for a while, even though we have 3D cameras. And talk about how our method merges two segmentation techniques, random walks and graph cuts, modified versions of that. And how our method is a semi-automatic approach. It's not a fully automatic. Then I'll show some results and conclude. Definitely there has been a keen interest in 3D over the last decade and probably more so over the last 5 years. So 3D imaging and depth perception, we want to render two distinct images. In 2D to 3D conversion, that's the goal. We don't have two cameras. We're given one image and we want to find the left or right image, depending which way you define it, and create a 3D image. So we know that there are technologies for displaying 3D content. Most of us have experienced a 3D setup. Some of us probably have it at home. And the two most popular methods for producing 3D content is having 3D cameras or taking a 2D image and converting it to 3D. The best solution definitely is to capture with a 3D camera. And some people are doing that already. Even consumer cameras exist for people. I mean, I have one myself. And there are movie producers out there, Avatar being a good example of a good portion of the movie is actually filmed with two cameras. However, there's still an extremely large proportion of people who produce content that do not want to and refuse to film with two cameras. So even though it's available, they don't want to do that. They feel that their image and the way they see a scene is better represented with a single camera. So there are some people you can't convert to 3D. They want to convert. The studios want to convert to 3D afterwards when they realize that they can make a lot more money. When people who do use two cameras realize that it can be expensive and it's difficult. Filming in 3D with two cameras, your mindset changes on how you have to film. Some things cannot be filmed in 3D, i.e. very fast close-up motion. There are certain ways that scenes are taken that cannot be done in 3D. So there's a drawback to it. Many times, 2D to 3D conversion can be preferred, especially if it's also content that you've already had in your archive. A lot of movie houses have millions of hours of movies and content that they would love to make new money from, and they would love to convert it to 3D and be able to do that. So 2D to 3D conversion is perfect for that. Of course, we know that there are many examples of 2D to 3D conversion. I've worked with industrial partners where our job was to help them find methods and aid them in doing 2D to 3D conversion, especially in high-resolution cinema, and there's a great demand for that. As much as we know that the 3D cameras are out there, there is a very strong demand to convert to 3D from a single image. So as much as I applaud the previous people, the lecturers, 2D to 3D conversion is still very strong and won't die anytime soon. So we want to concentrate on recovering a depth map, not necessarily the most accurate and precise depth map, but we want to be able to show relative depth between objects. So once you have the depth map, as we've seen from previous lectures, you can get a stereo pair. What we've done in the past and what we aim to do is a semi-automatic approach. We've worked with an industrial partner in the past, very well-known one, that converts high-resolution 2D to 3D movies, and their goal is not to do it quickly. Their goal is to do it precisely. And they can spend about 3 months to convert about 20 minutes of a movie, and it's all done manually. They will segment objects from an image, and they will be very meticulous in how accurate that is. So they want extremely accurate edges and when they segment objects. The depth is not so much their issue because they can adjust that. So they like a semi-automatic approach, one where you can have a user give some indication of what things should be segmented and let the algorithm work from that information. In the 2D to 3D conversion world, doing a fully automatic approach is considered a holy grail. They don't expect to see that happening. So the best results so far in that field have been semi-automatic approaches. Our method has been inspired by Gutman and his team. They give very good results. It tends to be a pretty complex algorithm and scheme, but it's quite good, and it's based on random walks. And they use a support vector machine for some training and classification. So it was we saw this as random walks, and we realized that we could use our method from random walks as something similar. And from our interaction with industry, we used graph cuts before to help with segmentation, and very popular technique. And we also used the random walks to refine those things. So we thought we'd try to merge those two together. So we merge random walks, which is a well-known technique, and graph cuts, which is an even better known technique. And we have modified versions of these two that we merged together. Instead of considering each label, when you take an object and an image and you do a semi-automatic approach, usually you put markers in the image. If anyone's familiar with graph cut, you know you do brush strokes and you can identify background and foreground. And those are called labels. So instead of the mindset of we're segmenting an object from its background, we modify graph cuts and we do a multiple object segmentation, and we consider that essentially depth. So we allow the user to define objects, but also give a relative depth. Random walks is a pretty well-known method also. It's a solution to a linear system, and it's known to be very good on edges that are fine detail and gradual change, but they're not very good at strong edges. Whereas graph cuts is extremely good with rough, strong edges, but not very good on edges that change over with contrast. So we want to combine those two together. So what we first do is we allow the user, and I'll show later when I get to the results, how the user will select different levels of depth in the image with easy brush strokes, and we then apply a random walks to that. And we do a random walk segmentation of the algorithm of the image. And we modify the random walks. We do a scale space random walk where we find that random walks is susceptible to noise. And we do a scale space version of the image, and we do a random walks at each level and merge those results via a geometric mean. And we get our own result. And once we've done that, we take a graph cut of the same image using the same input from the user. And we do a modified version of graph cut where we do a multiple label graph cut. So we segment a recursive segmentation of objects relative to each other over the multiple labels in their graph cut. Now we end up with two different types of segmentation or depth information results, and the point is to merge the two together. The merging of our depth map is essentially done with a geometric mean. Now, this is a preliminary result in how we tried to merge these things together. We do a geometric mean to hopefully allow the areas like where graph cut is more is stronger to overcome the random walks result. So our geometric mean tended from a first result tended to have a good experimental output. Currently, we have a student that's taken over this task and is trying to figure out a more adaptive way of finding weights of the geometric mean currently, and then to find a totally different weighting on top of that. So I'll show you a few results of how it's done. So I'll come back to this. Just for example, this is one of the original images on the left, and the user is presented with a 2D image, and all the user is expected to do is to mark a relative depth on the image. There's the mouse. Okay, so anything that's white is considered would be marked by the user as being closer to us, and anything that's black would be considered to be furthest away. And the in-between gray values, in this case we only have three, would be somewhere in between. But we can modify that to have many levels of disparity difference or depth, relative depth distance. So the user could modify multiple areas with the relative depth. And that's very similar to how, you know, graph cuts works, is you mark areas as foreground and background, and you let the algorithm do its job. That's what we mean by semi-automated. We don't want to have the user provide any more information than that. So on the top left is the modified, our SSRW, or modified random walks depth map from the user input, and the bottom one is the graph cuts depth map. Notice we have some occlusion holes that result, and those we just used a simple in painting method. Pretty much anything could be used there. But for our results, I think the students just did a modified random walk to actually fill that in the end. But we wanted to merge these two results. Graph cut tends to be a very good binary-like segmentation of objects. Depth map, SSRW, gives us a more gradual change in depth. The point was to merge those two things together. So by using the geometric mean, we're hoping to merge those two together. And we find that we tend to create a more gradual type of realistic depth map by merging the two together. So this is the synthesized right view from the original image, and this is an anaglyph image. Of course, we don't have 3D glasses here, but if anyone's interested, our web address is on the paper and can be viewed with anaglyphs online. But it gives a sense of how the shift has happened and how much disparity has shown in the image. So another example, user just selects the background, foreground, and a couple of gray strokes on the building. These are the two random walks and the graph cut. As we notice, the random walks gives a very nice gradual foreground to background disparity map. This is the depth map that results. This is the synthesized right view, along with the anaglyph image, to give a notion of how much depth there is in that. Of course, not everything's rosy. This is an example where it didn't work very well. This is the original on the left, and the depth labels that the user provides, having some issues with our graph cut, I think, here, but I think the merging with our new investigation on how to merge the two, we're hoping that we can base it on some image information to try to create a better depth map from merging the two methods together. I have to stress the importance of our algorithm is the fact that we don't want to automate it. We want the user to have some kind of input. And honestly, this is the only amount of input that the user would take. It's a couple of seconds of input to just draw these types of lines. On top of that, the beauty of it is that if it screws up or something's not right, the user is able to go back and modify and erase their strokes, maybe add some more, and help the algorithm work a little better. Now, our results are preliminary. We know that our SSRW method has worked very well in the past. You can find the references or papers in the actual paper. But we feel that with merging the two together, these two methods that work very well independently, we should be able to get a very good approximate relative depth between objects, which tends to be a very important aspect. So our preliminary results have shown that the depth maps contain the best, or try to contain the best of both these methods. So graph cut provides consistent and noticeable borders, which is why it's used very much in segmentation. And random walks allows us to capture texture and gradients a little better. There are drawbacks to our method. If one of the depth maps is not correct, as I showed you in the previous one, a graph cut was incorrect, it can screw up the results. But because it's such a simple method and can run relatively quickly, it's a few seconds a frame, a user can go back and modify and change their labels to modify the algorithm to hopefully correct it. Also, weighting scheme is static. Again, it's very initial result, and we're trying to, you know, find some kind of adaptive way of doing this. As I mentioned here, my future work are students. So we're looking at ways to adaptively merge these depth maps. And another aspect in the future is to try to extend it to video sequences to create a volumetric type of environment where we can merge the two results, do graph cut and random walks across a volumetric model of the scene and try to segment that. Thank you.
Okay, we can have some questions.
So a graph cut minimizes the L1 norm of the gradient and random walker the L2 norm of the gradient. And recently, Leo Grady and co-author proposed a method to minimize directly the LP norm of the gradient, where P can vary between 1 and 2. Maybe, were you aware of this method? And if yes, have you tried to use it instead of merging the two results of graph cut and random walker?
I'm not sure if the students were aware of that paper at the time. I'd have to check on that.
Okay.
But I'm not familiar with the details of that.
Okay.
I'd appreciate the reference, though.
Okay, I will talk to you later.
Hello. My question is, how do you determine the number of depth layers that you have in the scene?
It's all by the user. It's up to the user to define how many depth levels there are, how many depth layers. So the user can do a foreground and background if that's what they want, or they can do two or three or four, depending on how much detail or depth they want. It's all up to the user.
How about the consistency of the result in time in video sequences?
That's definitely a problem. Time, we haven't investigated that at all. So going from frame to frame, you're going to see issues with edges and ripples. Definitely one of the biggest issues with 2D to 3D conversion is definitely that. Again, when we extend to video, that's going to be one of the top priorities.
I also want to know that whether the user need to assign the depth value for each of the layer.
Well, the user will, I mean, if you're familiar with GraphCut, the user just selects foreground, background. So in this case, instead of thinking foreground, background, the user thinks closer and further away. So if the user thinks that there are three or four objects or depth layers, they would draw accordingly the objects and assign labels to those which are further back from the front object and further back from that object and so on. So it's, again, as I mentioned to the previous question, is that it's all dependent on the user's perception of the image and what objects they consider are closer or further away from you.
How about the accept depth value?
Pardon?
The depth value.
Depth value is, it's what we care about is the relative depth.
Oh.
See, companies like IMAX, for example, when they convert a movie, they don't care about the actual depth, they care about the relative depth because they will move objects further into the 3D cube to make the effect bigger. So they're not there to make it seem realistic to you. They're there to make it more, you know, extra realistic or super realistic. So they care about the depth, relative depth, and that's what we concentrate on.
Okay,
it's not like robotic vision where things have to be, you know, the precise depth.
Hi, what happens if the user puts things in the wrong order? How robust is it to that situation?
Ah, we're pretty much screwed then. Well, then the whole depth changes. Because it's semi-automatic, all these methods depend on the user's expertise and interpretation. So if a user wants to do that, that's fine. It's just going to make the result totally backward. So things will just shift.
Thank you.
Okay.
Okay, let's thank our speaker again.